pushed myself against the table, trying to conceal the pen in my lap. He raised his eyebrows at me, flashing the gold tooth under his lip. "Finished," I said, sliding the drawing toward him. "Da," he said, nodding. He stared at me, his toothpick bobbing on his tongue. Chapter 45. I walked between the huts in the dark, making my way toward the NKVD building at the back of the camp. I heard voices mumbling behind the brittle walls. I hurried along the tree line, cradling the cigarettes and the pen in my pocket. I stopped behind a tree. The NKVD barracks looked like a hotel compared with our shacks. Kerosene lamps burned brightly. A group of NKVD sat on the porch playing cards and passing a flask. I crept in the shadows to the back of the building. I heard something. Crying. And whispers in Lithuanian. I turned the corner. Mrs. Arvidas sat on a crate, her shoulders rising and falling in rhythm with muffled sobs. Andrus knelt down in front of her, his hands clasping hers. I inched closer. His head snapped up.
"What do you want, Lina?"
said Andrus. Mrs. Arvidas, are you all right?" She turned her head away from me.
"Leave, Lina,"
said Andrus. "Can I help somehow?" I asked.
"No."
"Is there anything I can do?" I pressed.
"I said leave!"
Andrus stood up to face me. I hung motionless. "I came to give you..." I reached in my pocket for the cigarettes. Mrs. Arvidas turned her head to me. Her eye makeup ran down over a bloody welt that blazed across her cheek. What had they done to her? I felt the cigarettes crush between my fingers. Andrus stared at me.
"I'm sorry." My voice caught and broke. "I'm really so sorry."
I turned quickly and began to run. Images streaked and bled together, contorted by my speed. Ulyushka grinning with yellow teeth. Ona in the dirt, her one dead eye open. The guard moving toward me. Smoke blowing from his pursed lips. "Stop it, Lina." Papa's battered face looking down at me from the hole. Dead bodies lying next to the train tracks. The commander reaching for my breast. "Stop it!" I couldn't. I ran back to our shack.
"Lina, what's wrong?"
asked Jonas.
"Nothing!"
I paced the floor. I hated this labor camp. Why were we here? I hated the commander. I hated Kretzky. Ulyushka complained and stomped for me to sit down.
"Shut up, you witch!"
I screamed. I rifled through my suitcase. My hand knocked the stone from Andrus. I grabbed it. I thought about throwing it at Ulyushka. Instead, I tried to crush it. I didn't have the strength. I put it in my pocket and snatched my paper. I found a sliver of light outside in the back of our hut. I held the stolen pen above the paper. My hand began to move in short, scratchy strokes. I took a breath. Fluid strokes. Mrs. Arvidas slowly appeared on the page. Her long neck, her full lips. I thought of Munch as I sketched, his theory that pain, love, and despair were links in an endless chain. My breathing slowed. I shaded her thick chestnut hair resting in a smooth curve against her face, a large bruise blazing across her cheek. I paused, looking over my shoulder to make certain I was alone. I drew her eye makeup smudged by tears. In her watery eyes, I drew the reflection of the commander standing in front of her, his fist clenched. I continued to sketch, exhaled, and shook out my hands. I returned to our shack and hid the pen and drawing in my suitcase. Jonas sat on the floor, bobbing his knee nervously. Ulyushka was asleep on her pallet, snoring.
"Where's mother?"
I asked.
"The grouchy woman went to the village today," said Jonas. "Mother walked down the road to meet her on the way back."
"It's late," I said.
"She's not back?"
I had given the grouchy woman a wood carving to pass along for Papa. I walked outside and saw Mother coming toward the shack. She carried coats and boots. She smiled her huge smile when she saw me. Miss Grievous came scurrying toward us.
"Hurry," she said. Put those things out of sight. The NKVD is rounding everyone up to sign papers.
I didn't have a chance to tell Mother about Mrs. Arvidus. We put everything in the bald man's shack. Mother put her arms around me. Her dress hung on her thin frame, her hip bones protruding at the belted waistline.
She mailed our letters, whispered Mother, beaming.
I nodded, hoping the handkerchief had passed across hundreds of miles already, ahead of the letters. It wasn't 5 minutes before the NKVD burst into our hut, yelling for us to report to the office. Jonas and I marched along with Mother.
And drawing the map this afternoon? She asked.
Easy, I said, thinking of the stolen pen hidden in my suitcase.
I wasn't sure if it was safe, said Mother. But I guess I was wrong.
She put her arms around us. Sure, we were safe. Safe in the arms of hell.
Tadas was sent to the principal today, announced Jonas at dinner.
He wedged a huge piece of sausage into his small mouth.
Why? I asked. Because he talked about hell,
sputtered Jonas, juice from the plump sausage dribbling down his chin.
Jonas, don't speak with your mouth full. Take smaller pieces, scolded Mother.
Sorry, said Jonas with his mouth stuffed. It's good.
He finished chewing. I took a bite of sausage. It was warm and the skin was deliciously salty.
Tadas told one of the girls that hell is the worst place ever and there's no escape for all eternity.
Now why would Tadas be talking of hell? Asked Papa, reaching for the vegetables.
Because his father told him that if Stalin comes to Lithuania, we'll all end up there.
Chapter 46.
It's called Torechek, Mother told us the next day. It's up in the hills. It's not large, but there's a post office and even a small schoolhouse. There's a school, said Miss Grievous excitedly.
Jonas shot me a look. He had been asking about school since the beginning of September.
Elena, you must tell them I'm a teacher, said Miss Grievous. The children in the camp must go to school. We have to create some sort of school here.
Did she mail the letters? Asked the bald man.
Yes, and she wrote the post office address on the return.
But how will we know if any letters arrive for us? Said Mrs. Rimmis.
Well, we'll have to continue to bribe someone who signed, said Miss Grievous with a grimace. They'll check for our mail when they take their trips to the village.
She said she met a Latvian woman whose husband is in a prison near Tomsk, said Mother.
Oh, Elena, could our husbands be in Tomsk? Asked Mrs. Rimmis, bringing her hand to her chest.
Her husband wrote that he is spending time with many Lithuanian friends, Mother smiled.
But she said the letters were cryptic and arrived with markings.
Of course they did, said the bald man. They're censored. That Latvian woman better be careful what she writes. And you better be careful too, unless you want to be shot in the head.
Will you never stop? I said.
It's the truth. Your love letters could get them killed. And what of the war?
Asked the bald man.
The Germans have taken Kiev, said Mother. What are they doing there? Asked Jonas.
What do you think they're doing? They're killing people. This is war, said the bald man.
Are the Germans killing people in Lithuania? Said Jonas.
Stupid boy. Don't you know? Said the bald man. Hitler. He's killing the Jews. Lithuanians could be helping him.
What? I said. What do you mean? Hitler pushed Stalin out of Lithuania, said Jonas.
That doesn't make him a hero. Our country is doomed, don't you see? Our fate is genocide, no matter whose hands we fall into, said the bald man.
Stop it, yelled Miss Grievous. I can't bear to hear about it.
That's enough, Mr. Stalas, said Mother.
What about America or Britain? Asked Mrs. Rimmis. Surely they'll help us.
Nothing yet, said Mother. But soon, I hope. And that was the first news of Lithuania in months. Mother's spirits soared. Despite her hunger and blisters from hard work, she was effervescent. She walked with a bounce. Hope
like oxygen, kept her moving. I thought about Papa. Was he really in prison somewhere in Siberia? I recalled the map I had drawn for the NKVD, and then Stalin and Hitler dividing up Europe. Suddenly, a thought hit me. If Hitler was killing the Jews in Lithuania, what had happened to Dr. Seltzer? The possibility of letters en route made for endless conversation. We learned the names of everyone's relatives, neighbors, co-workers, anyone who could possibly send a letter. Miss Grebus was sure the young man who had lived next door to her would send a letter.
No, he won't. He probably never noticed you lived there, said the bald man. You're not exactly the noticeable type.
Miss Grebus was not amused. Jonas and I laughed about it later. At night, we'd lie in our straw creating ridiculous scenarios of Miss Grebus romancing her young neighbor. Mother told us to stop, but sometimes I heard her giggling right along with us. Temperatures dipped and the NKVD pushed us harder. They even gave us an extra ration at one point because they wanted another barrack built before the snow came. We still refused to sign the papers. Andrus still refused to speak to me. We planted potatoes for spring, even though no one wanted to believe we might still be in Siberia when the cold broke. The Soviets forced Mother to teach school to a mixed class of Altaian and Lithuanian children. Only the children whose parents signed were allowed to attend school. They forced her to teach in Russian, even though many children did not yet fully understand the language. The NKVD would not let Miss Grebus teach. It pained her. They told her if she signed, they would allow her to assist Mother. She wouldn't sign, but helped Mother with lesson plans in the evening. I was happy that Mother was able to teach in a covered shack. Jonas had been reassigned to chopping logs for firewood. The snow had arrived, and he came back each night wet and freezing. The tips of his frozen hair would simply break off. My joints became stiff from the cold. I was sure the insides of my bones were full of ice. They made a cracking, snapping sound when I stretched. Before we could get warm, we'd feel a horrible stinging sensation in our hands, feet, and face. The NKVD grew more irritable when the cold came. So did Ilyushka. She demanded rent whenever she felt like it. I literally wrestled my bread ration out of her hand on several occasions. Jonas paid Ilyushka our rent with splinters and logs he stole from the cutting. Thankfully, he had made sturdy boots and shoes for us while working with the two Siberian women. His Russian was quickly improving. I drew my little brother taller, his face somber. I was assigned to hauling 60-pound bags of grain on my back through the snow. Mrs. Rimmis taught me how to pilfer some by moving the weave of the bag aside with a needle and then moving it back undetected. We were quickly perfecting the art of scavenging. Jonas sneaked out each night to retrieve scraps of food from the NKVD's trash. Bugs and maggots didn't deter anyone. A couple of flicks of the finger, and we stuffed it in our mouths. Sometimes Jonas would return with care packages that Andrus and Mrs. Arvidus would hide in the trash. But aside from the occasional bounty from Andrus, we had become bottom feeders, living off filth and rot. Chapter 47. As the bald man predicted, we were able to continually bribe the grouchy woman into visiting the post office for us when she went into the village. For 2 months, our bribe returned nothing. We shivered in our shacks, warmed only by the promise of an eventual envelope carrying news from home. Temperatures lived well below zero. Yona slept near the little stove, waking every few hours to add more wood. My toes were numb, the skin cracked. Mrs. Rimmis was the first to receive a letter. It was from a distant cousin and arrived mid-November. News traveled fast around the camp that a letter had arrived. Nearly 20 people pushed inside her shack to hear the news from Lithuania. Mrs. Rimmis hadn't returned from the ration line. We waited. Andrus arrived. He squeezed in next to me. He produced stolen crackers from his pockets for everyone. We tried to keep our voices down, but excitement percolated through the packed crowd. I turned, accidentally elbowing Andrus. Sorry, I said. He nodded. How are you? I asked.
Fine,
he replied. The bald man entered the shack and complained there was no room. People pushed forward. I was smashed against the front of Andrus's coat. How's your mother? I asked, glancing up at him.
As well as can be expected, he said.
What do they have you doing these days? My chin was practically against his chest.
Chopping down trees in the forest?
He shifted his weight, looking down at me. You? He asked. I could feel a wisp of his breath on the top of my hair. Hauling bags of grain, I said. He nodded. The envelope was handed around. Some people kissed it. It came to us. Andrus ran his finger over the Lithuanian stamp and postmark. Have you written to anyone? I asked Andrus. He shook his head.
We're not sure it's safe yet, he said.
Mrs. Rimmis arrived. The group tried to part, but it was too crowded. I was shoved into Andrus again. He grabbed me, trying to keep us from pushing the crowd like a line of dominoes. We steadied ourselves. He quickly let go. Mrs. Rimmis said a prayer before opening the envelope. As expected, some lines of the letter were crossed out with thick black ink, but enough was legible. I have two letters from our friend in Yanova, read Mrs. Rimmis. That has to be my husband, she cried. He was born in Yanova. He's alive! The women hugged.
Keep reading, yelled the bald man.
He said that he and some friends decided to visit a summer camp, said Mrs. Rimmis. He finds it beautiful, she continued, just as described in Psalm 102. Someone get their Bible! Look up Psalm 102, said Miss Grebus. There's some sort of message in that. We helped decode the rest of the letter with Mrs. Rimmis. Someone joked that the crowd was better than a stove for warmth. I stole glances at Andrus. His bone structure and eyes were strong, perfectly proportioned. It appeared that he was able to shave from time to time. His skin was windburned like the rest of us, but his lips weren't thin or cracked like the NKVD. His wavy brown hair was clean compared with mine. He looked down. I looked away. I couldn't imagine how filthy I must have looked or what he saw in my hair. Jonas returned with Mother's Bible. Hurry, someone said. Psalm 102. I have it, said Jonas. Shh, let him read. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come unto thee. Hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. Incline thine ear unto me. In the day when I call, answer me speedily. For my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned as a firebrand. My heart is stricken and withered like grass. I forget to eat my bread. By reason of the voice of my groaning, my bones cleave to my flesh. Someone gasped. Jonas's voice trailed off. I clutched Andrus's arm. Keep going, said Mrs. Rimmis. She wrung her hands. The wind whistled and the walls of the hut shuddered. Jonas's voice grew faint. I am like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl in the desert. I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Mine enemies reproach me all the day, and they that are mad against me are sworn against me. For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping. My days are like a shadow that declineth, and I am withered like grass. Make him stop, I whispered to Andrus, dropping my head against his coat. Please. But he didn't stop. Jonas finally finished. A gust of wind clattered against the roof. Amen, said Mrs. Rimmis. Amen, echoed the others. He's starving, I said.
So what? We're starving. I'm withered like grass, too, said the bald man. He's no worse off than me.
He's alive, said Andrus quietly. I looked up at him. Of course. He wished his father was alive, even if he was starving.
Yes, Andrus is right, said Mother. He's alive, and your cousin has probably sent him word that you're alive, too.
Mrs. Rimmis read the letter again. Some people left the shack. Andrus was one of them. Jonas followed. Chapter 48. It happened a week later. Mother said she had seen signs. I saw nothing. Miss Grebus waved frantically to me. She was trying to run through the snow.
Lina, you must hurry. It's Jonas, she whispered.
Mother said she had noticed that his color had turned. Everyone's color had turned. Gray had crept beneath our skin, settling in the dark trenches under our eyes. Kretzky wouldn't let me leave my work.
Please, I begged. Jonas is sick.
Couldn't he help just this once? He pointed back to the stack of grain sacks. The commander walked around, yelling and kicking at us to hurry. A snowstorm was coming. Dvai, yelled Kretzky. By the time I returned to our shack, Mother was already there. Jonas was lying on her pallet of straw, nearly unconscious. What is it? I asked, kneeling beside her.
I don't know.
She pulled up Jonas's pant leg. His shin was covered in spots. It may be some sort of infection. He has a fever, she said, putting her hand on my brother's forehead.
Did you notice how irritable and tired he has become?
Honestly, no. We're all irritable and tired, I said. I looked at Jonas. How could I not have noticed? Sores lined his bottom lip and his gums looked purple. Red spots dotted his hands and fingers.
Lina, go get our bread rations. Your brother will need nourishment to fight this off. And see if you can find Mrs. Rimmis.
I fought my way through the swirling snow in the dark, the wind stabbing at my face. The NKVD wouldn't give me 3 rations. Because Jonas collapsed on the job, they said, he had forfeited his rations. I tried to explain that he was ill. They waved me away. Mrs. Rimmis didn't know what it was, nor Miss Grebus. Jonas seemed to slip further from consciousness. The bald man arrived. He loomed over Jonas.
Is it contagious? Does anyone else have spots? The boy could be the angel of death for us all. A girl died of dysentery a few days ago. Maybe that's what it is. I think they threw her in that hole you dug, he said. Mother ordered him out of the shack.
Ilyushka yelled at us to take Jonas outside in the snow. Mother yelled back and told her to sleep somewhere else if she was worried about contagion. Ilyushka stomped out. I sat next to Jonas, holding a snow-cooled cloth to his forehead. Mother knelt down and spoke softly, kissing his face and hands.
Not my children, whispered Mother. Please, God, spare him. He is so young. He's seen so little of life. Please, take me instead.
Mother raised her head, her face contorted with pain.
Kostas?
It was late when the man who wound his watch arrived with a kerosene lamp.
Scurvy,
he announced after looking at Jonas's gums.
It's advanced. His teeth are turning blue. Don't worry. It's not contagious. But you'd best find this boy something with vitamins before his organs shut down completely. He's malnourished. He could turn at any point.
My brother was a rendering from Psalm 102. Weak and withered like grass. Mother rushed out into the snow to beg, leaving me with Jonas. I laid compresses on his forehead. I tucked the stone from Andrus under his hand and told him that the sparkles inside would heal him. I recounted stories from our childhood and described our house room by room. I took Mother's Bible and prayed for God to spare my brother. My worry made me nauseous. I grabbed my paper and began to sketch something for Jonas, something that would make him feel better. I had started a drawing of his bedroom when Andrus arrived.
How long has he been like this?
He said, kneeling by Jonas. Since this afternoon, I replied.
Can he hear me?
I don't know, I said. Jonas, you're going to be all right. We just need to find you something to eat and drink. Hang on, friend. Do you hear me?
Jonas lay motionless. Andres took a cloth bundle from inside his coat. He unwrapped a small silver can and pulled a pocket knife from his pants. He punctured the top of the can.
What is it? I asked.
He has to eat this, said Andres, leaning toward my brother's face. Jonas, if you can hear me, open your mouth.
Jonas didn't move.
Jonas, I said, open your mouth. We have something that's going to help you.
His lips parted.
That's good, said Andres.
He dipped the blade of the knife into the can. It reappeared with a juicy stewed tomato on it. The back of my jaws cramped. Tomatoes! I began to salivate. As soon as the tomato touched Jonas's mouth, his lips began to quiver.
Yes, chew it and swallow, said Andres. He turned to me. Do you have any water?
Yes, rainwater, I said.
Give it to him, said Andres. He has to eat all of this.
I eyed the can of tomatoes. Juice spilled off Andres's knife and onto his fingers.
Where did you get them? I asked.
He looked at me disgusted.
I got them at the corner market. Have you been there?
He stared, then turned away.
Where do you think I got them? I stole them.
He heaped the last of the tomatoes into my brother's mouth. Jonas drank the juice from the can. Andres wiped the blade and juice from his fingers on his trousers. I felt my body surge forward toward the juice.
Mother arrived with one of the Siberian shoemakers. Snow was piled atop their heads and shoulders. The woman ran to my brother, speaking quickly in Russian.
I tried to explain what was wrong, said Mother, but she insisted on seeing for herself.
Andres brought a can of tomatoes. He fed them to Jonas, I said.
Tomatoes, gasped Mother. Oh, thank you! Thank you, dear, and please thank your mother for me!
The Siberian woman began speaking to Mother.
There's a tea she thinks will heal him, translated Andres. She's asking your mother to help her collect the ingredients. I nodded.
Andres, could you stay a bit longer? Asked Mother.
I know Jonas would feel so much better with you here.
Lina, boil some water for the tea.
Mother leaned over my brother.
Jonas, I'll be right back, darling. I'm going for a tea that will help you.
Chapter 49. We sat in silence. Andres stared at my brother, his fists clenched. What was he thinking? Was he mad that Jonas was sick? Was he mad that his mother was sleeping with the NKVD? Was he mad that his father was dead? Maybe he was just mad at me.
Andres. He didn't look at me. Andres, I'm a complete idiot.
He turned his head.
You're so good to us, and I'm just an idiot.
I looked down. He said nothing.
I jumped to a conclusion. I was stupid. I'm sorry I accused you of spying. I felt horrible.
He remained silent.
Andres!
Okay. You're sorry, he said.
He looked back to my brother.
And I'm sorry about your mother,
I blurted. I grabbed my writing tablet. I sat down to finish the drawing of Jonas's room. At first, I was conscious of the silence. It hung heavy, awkward. As I continued to sketch, I slipped into my drawing. I became absorbed with capturing the folds of the blanket perfectly, softly. The desk and the books had to be just right. Jonas loved his desk and his books. I loved books. How I missed my books. I held my school bag, protecting my books. I couldn't let it slap and bang in the usual way. After all, Edvard Munch was in my bag. I had waited nearly 2 months for my teacher to receive the books. They had finally arrived from Oslo. I knew my parents wouldn't appreciate Munch or his style. Some called it degenerate art. But as soon as I saw photos of anxiety, despair, and the scream, I had to see more. his works wrenched and distorted as if painted through neurosis. I was fascinated. I opened our front door. I saw the solitary envelope and raced toward the foyer table. I tore it open. Dear Lina, Happy New Year. I'm sorry I haven't written. Now that the Christmas holiday is past, life seems on a more serious course. Mother and father have been arguing. Father is constantly ill-tempered and rarely sleeps. He paces the house through all hours of the night and comes home at lunchtime to get the mail. He's boxed up most of his books, saying they take up too much space. He even tried to box up some of my medical books. Has he gone mad? Things have changed since the annexation. Lina, please draw a picture of the cottage in Nida for me. The warm and sunny memories of the summer will help push me through the cold to spring. Please send me your news and let me know where your thoughts and drawings take you these days. Your loving cousin, Joanna.
He told me about his airplane, said Andrus, pointing over my shoulder to the drawing. I had forgotten he was there. I nodded. He loves them. Can I see?
Sure, I said, handing him my tablet.
It's good, said Andrus. His thumb was pressed against the edge of the tablet. Can I look at the others?
Yes, I said, thankful there were only a few sketches I hadn't yet torn from the pad.
Andrus turned the page. I took the compress from Jonas's head and went to cool it in the snow. When I returned, Andrus was looking at a picture I had drawn of him. It was from the day Mrs. Rimmis received the letter.
It's a strange angle, he said, laughing quietly.
I sat down.
You're taller than me. That's how I saw it.
And we were all packed pretty tight.
So you had a good angle of my nostrils, he said.
Well, I was looking up at you. This angle would be different, I said, observing him.
He turned to me.
See, you look different from this perspective, I said.
Better or worse? He asked.
Mother and the Siberian woman returned. Thank you, Andrus, said Mother.
He nodded. He leaned over and whispered something to Jonas. He left.
We steeped the leaves in the water I had boiled. Jonas drank it. Mother stayed propped at his side. I lay down but couldn't sleep. Each time I closed my eyes, I saw the painting of the scream in my head. But the face was my face.
Chapter 50. It took 2 weeks for Jonas to improve. His legs trembled when he walked. His voice was barely more than a whisper. In the meantime, Mother and I became weaker. We had to split our 2 bread rations to feed Jonas. At first, when we asked, people contributed a portion of what they had. But as the cold crept deeper into our shacks, it began to chill generosity. One day, I saw Miss Grebus turn her back and shove her entire bread ration into her mouth the moment it was handed to her. I couldn't blame her. I had often thought of doing the same thing. Mother and I didn't ask for contributions after that. Despite our pleadings, the NKVD refused to give us food for Jonas. Mother even tried speaking to the commander. He laughed at her. He said something that upset her for days. We had nothing left to sell. We had bartered practically everything we owned with the Altaians for warm clothing. The lining of Mother's coat hung thin like fluttering cheesecloth. The approach of Christmas bolstered spirits. We gathered in each other's shacks to reminisce about the holidays in Lithuania. We talked endlessly about Kūčios, our Christmas Eve celebration. It was decided that Kūčios would be held in the bald man's shack. He grudgingly agreed. We closed our eyes when listening to the descriptions of the 12 delicious dishes representing the 12 apostles. People rocked back and forth, nodding. Mother talked of the delicious poppy seed soup and cranberry pudding. Mrs. Rimmis cried at the mention of the wafer in the traditional Christmas blessing. God grant that we are all together again next year. The guards warmed themselves with drink after work. They often forgot to check on us or didn't want to venture out into the biting frosty winds. We gathered each night to hear about someone's holiday celebration. We grew to know each other through our longings and cherished memories. Mother insisted that we invite the grouchy woman to our meetings. She said that just because she had signed didn't mean she wasn't homesick. Snow fell and the temperatures plummeted, but work in the cold felt tolerable. We had something to look forward to, a small ritual that brought relief to our gray days and dark nights. I had begun to steal logs to keep the stove fired. Mother constantly worried, but I assured her I was careful and that the NKVD were too lazy to come out into the cold. One night, I left the bald man's shack to get a log for the stove. I crept around his shack. I heard a movement and froze. Someone was standing in the shadows. Was it Kretzky? My heart stopped. Was it the commander?
It's just me, Lina.
I heard Andrus's voice in the darkness. He struck a match and lit a cigarette, briefly illuminating his face.
You scared me, I said. Why are you standing out here?
I listen from out here.
Why don't you come inside? It's freezing, I said.
They wouldn't want me inside. It's not fair. Everyone is so hungry.
That's not true. We'd be happy to have you. We're just talking about Christmas.
I know. I've heard. My mother begs me to bring her the stories each night.
Really? If I hear about cranberry pudding one more time, I'll go crazy, I said, smiling. I just need to get some wood.
You mean steal some, he said.
Well, yes, I guess, I said.
He shook his head, chuckling. You're really not scared, are you?
No, I said.
I'm cold, he laughed.
Do you want to walk with me?
I asked.
Nah. I better get back, he said. Be careful. Good night.
3 days later, Mrs. Arvidus and Andrus arrived with a bottle of vodka. The crowd fell silent when they walked through the door. Mrs. Arvidus wore stockings. Her hair was clean and curled. Andrus looked down. He stuffed his hands in his pockets. I didn't care that she wore a clean dress and wasn't hungry. No one wanted to trade places with her.
A toast, said Mother, lifting the bottle of vodka to Mrs. Arvidus. To good friends.
Mrs. Arvidus smiled and nodded. Mother took a small sip from the bottle and then shimmied at the hips, delighted. We all joined in, taking small sips and laughing together, savoring the moment. Andrus leaned back against the wall, watching us and grinning. That night, I fantasized about Papa joining us for the holiday. I imagined him trudging through the falling snow toward Altai, arriving in time for Christmas with my handkerchief in his breast pocket.
Hurry, Papa, I urged. Please hurry.
Don't worry, Lina. He'll be here soon, said Mother. He's getting hay for the table.
I stood at the window looking out into the snow. Jonas helped Mother in the dining room.
So we'll have 12 courses tomorrow? We'll be eating all day.
He smacked his lips. Mother smoothed the white tablecloth over the dining room table.
Can I sit next to Grandma? Asked Jonas.
Papa's dark silhouette emerged on the street before I could protest and argue that I wanted to sit next to Grandma.
He's coming, I shouted.
I grabbed my coat. I ran down the front steps and stood in the middle of the street. The small dark figure grew taller as it approached through the low light of dusk and the curtain of falling snow. A tinkling of bells from a horse's harness floated from the street over. I heard his voice before I could make out his face.
Now what sort of sensible girl stands in the middle of the road when it's snowing?
Only one whose father is late,
I teased. Papa's face appeared, frosty and red. He carried a small bundle of hay.
I'm not late, he said, putting his arm around me. I'm right on time.
Chapter 51. Christmas Eve arrived. I worked all day chopping wood. Moisture from my nose froze encrusted around my nostrils. I kept my mind busy trying to remember details about each Christmas at home. No one swallowed their bread ration in line that night. We greeted each other kindly and made our way back to our shacks. Jonas looked somewhat like himself again. We washed our hair and melted snow and scrubbed at our fingernails. Mother pinned her hair up and dotted lipstick on her lips. She rubbed a bit of the red into my cheeks for color. "It's not perfect, but we do the best we can," said Mother, adjusting our clothes and hair. "Get the family picture," said Jonas. The others had the same idea. Photographs of families and loved ones were plentiful in the bald man's shack. I saw a photo of Mrs. Remus and her husband. He was short, like her. She was laughing in the photo. She looked so different, strong. Now she drooped like someone had sucked air out of her. The bald man was particularly quiet. We sat on the floor as if around a table. There was a white cloth in the center with hay and fir boughs in front of each person. One spot was left empty. A stub of tallow burned in front of it. Lithuanian tradition called for an empty place to be left at the table for family members who were gone or deceased. People placed photographs of their family and friends around the empty seat. I gently set our family photo at the empty setting. I took out the bundle of food I had been saving and placed it on the table. Some people had small surprises, a potato they had saved or something they had pilfered. The grouchy woman displayed some biscuits she must have bought in the village. Mother thanked her and made a fuss.
"The Arvidus boy and his mother sent this," said the bald man, "for after dinner."
He tossed something out. It landed with a thud. People gasped. I couldn't believe it. I was so shocked I started to laugh. It was chocolate. Real chocolate. And the bald man hadn't eaten it. Jonas whooped. "Shh! Jonas, not too loud," said Mother. She looked at the package on the table. "Chocolate. How wonderful. Our cup runneth over." The bald man put the bottle of vodka on the table. "Now you know better," scolded Miss Grievous. "Not for Kuchos."
"How the hell should I know?" snapped the bald man.
"Maybe after dinner," Mother winked.
"I don't want any part of it," said the bald man. "I'm Jewish."
Everyone looked up. "But, Mr. Stallis, why didn't you tell us?" asked Mother.
"Because it's none of your business," he snapped.
"But for days we've been meeting about Christmas, and you've been so kind to let us use your hut. If you had told us, we could have included a Hanukkah celebration," said Mother.
"Don't assume I haven't celebrated the Maccabees," said the bald man, pointing his finger. "I just don't blather on about it like you fools."
The room fell quiet.
"I don't wax on about my worship. It's personal. And honestly, poppy seed soup. Bah."
People shifted uncomfortably. Jonas started to laugh. He hated poppy seed soup. The bald man joined in. Soon we were all laughing hysterically. We sat for hours at our meal and makeshift table. We sang songs and carols. After much pressing, Mother persuaded the bald man to recite the Hebrew prayer Ma'otzor. His voice lacked its usual pinched tone. He closed his eyes. The words quivered with emotion. I stared at our family picture sitting at the empty seat. We had always spent Christmas at home, with bells tinkling in the streets and warm smells wafting from the kitchen. I pictured the dining room dark, the chandelier laced in cobwebs, and the table covered in a fine layer of dust. I thought of Papa. What was he doing for Christmas? Did he have a tiny piece of chocolate to melt on his tongue? The door to the shack blew open. The NKVD pushed inside, pointing guns at us. "Divai!" yelled a guard, grabbing the man who wound his watch. People began to protest.
"Please! It's Christmas Eve!" pleaded Mother.
Don't try to make a sign on Christmas Eve.
The guards yelled and began pushing people out of the shack. I wasn't leaving without Papa. I scrambled over to the other side of the table. I grabbed our family photo and stuffed it up my dress. I would hide it on the way to the Kolkhoz office. Kretzky didn't notice. He stood motionless, holding his rifle, staring at all the photographs.
Chapter 52. They worked us hard on Christmas Day. I stumbled from fatigue, having had no sleep the night before. When I returned to the shack, I could barely walk. Mother had given Ilyushka a whole package of cigarettes for Christmas. She sat with her feet propped up near the stove, smoking. Where had Mother gotten the cigarettes? I couldn't understand why Mother gave anything to Ilyushka. Jonas arrived with Andrus.
Merry Christmas, he said.
Thank you for the chocolate, said Mother.
We were beside ourselves.
Andrus, wait a minute, said Jonas. I have something for you.
I have something for you too, I said.
I reached into my suitcase and pulled out a sheet of paper. I handed it to Andrus.
It's not very good, I said.
But it's a better angle. Smaller nostrils.
It's great, said Andrus, looking at my drawing.
Really?
His eyes flashed up, locking on mine. Thank you.
I opened my mouth. Nothing came out. Merry Christmas, I finally said. Here, said Jonas, holding out his hand. It was yours. Then you gave it to Lina. She gave it to me when I was sick. I survived, so I figured it must be pretty lucky. I think it's your turn to have it. Jonas opened his fingers to reveal the stone with sparkles inside. He handed it to Andrus.
Thanks. I guess this thing is lucky, said Andrus, looking at the stone.
Merry Christmas, said Jonas. And thanks for the tomatoes. I'll walk back with you, said Mother. I'd like to wish your mother a Merry Christmas, if she can steal away for a moment. Jonas and I lay on our straw, bundled in our coats and boots. Remember when we used to sleep in pajamas? Asked Jonas.
Yes, with goose down covers, I said.
My body sank into the straw and into the quiet. I felt the chill of the hard ground slowly creeping onto my back and up over my shoulders. I hope Papa has a goose down blanket tonight, said Jonas.
Me too, I said.
Merry Christmas, Jonas.
Merry Christmas, Lina.
Merry Christmas, Papa, I whispered.
Chapter 53.
Lina, said Andrus, running into our shack. Hurry! They're coming for you!
Who? I asked, startled. I had just returned from work.
The commander and Kretzky are on their way now.
What? Why? Gasped Mother. I thought of the stolen ink pen hidden in my suitcase. I stole a pen, I said.
You did what? Said Mother. How could you be so foolish, stealing from the NKVD?
It's not about a pen, said Andrus. The commander wants you to draw his portrait.
I stopped and turned to Andrus.
What?
He's an egomaniac, said Andrus.
He went on about needing a portrait for the Kolkhoz office. A portrait for his wife.
His wife? Said Jonas.
I can't do it, I said. I can't concentrate around him.
I looked at Andrus. He makes me uncomfortable.
I'm going with you, said Mother.
He won't allow it, said Andrus.
I'll break my hands if I have to. I can't do it, I said.
Lina! You will do nothing of the sort, said Mother.
If you break your hands, you won't be able to work, said Andrus. And if you can't work, you'll starve to death.
Do they know she has other drawings? Jonas said quietly.
Andrus shook his head.
Lina,
Andrus lowered his voice. You have to make the picture flattering.
You're telling me how to draw, I said.
He sighed.
I like your drawings. Some are very realistic, but some,
They're, well, twisted.
But I draw what I see, I said.
You know what I mean, said Andrus.
And what am I going to get for this? I asked. I'm not doing this for a piece of bread or a couple of bent cigarettes.
We argued about what to ask for. Mother wanted postage stamps and seeds. Jonas wanted potatoes. I wanted our own shack and a goose down blanket. I thought about what Andrus said and struggled to decide what was flattering. Broad shoulders would signify power. His head turned slightly would accentuate his strong jawline. The uniform would be easy. I could draw it very accurately. It was his face that concerned me. When I imagined sketching the commander, I had no problem until I got to his head. My mind saw a clean and pressed uniform with a nest of wicked snakes sprouting out of his neck, or a skull with hollow black eyes smoking a cigarette. The impressions were strong. I longed to draw them. I needed to draw them. But I couldn't. Not in front of the commander. Chapter 54. A fire crackled in the Kolkhoz office. The room smelled of burning timber. I took off my mittens and warmed my hands on the fire. The commander marched in. He wore a spotless green uniform with blue piping. A black pullover strap cradled his pistol holder. I tried to make a note quickly so I wouldn't have to look at him. Blue pants, a blue hat with a raspberry band above the brim. Two shiny gold medals hung on the left side of the uniform. And of course, the ever-present toothpick danced back and forth from each side of his mouth. I dragged a chair near his desk and sat, motioning for the commander to be seated. He pulled his chair out and sat down in front of me, his knees nearly touching mine. I moved my chair back, pretending I was searching for the right angle.
Coat, he said.
I looked up at him.
Take it off.
I didn't move. He nodded, his deep-set eyes glaring through me. He wrapped his tongue around the toothpick, swirling it from side to side. I shook my head and rubbed my arms.
Cold, I said.
The commander rolled his eyes. I took a deep breath and looked up at the commander. He stared at me.
How old are you?
He asked, his eyes running over my body. It started. Snakes slithered out of his collar and wrapped themselves around his face, hissing at me. I blinked. A gray skull sat on his neck, its jaws flapping, laughing. I rubbed my eyes. There are no snakes. Don't draw the snakes. I now knew how Edvard Munch felt. Paint it as you see it, he had said during his lifetime. Even if it's a sunny day, but you see darkness and shadows, paint it as you see it. I blinked again. I can't, I thought. I can't draw it as I see it.
I don't understand, I lied.
I motioned for him to turn his head to the left. I drew a loose outline. I'd have to start with the uniform. I couldn't look at his face. I tried to work quickly. I didn't want to spend a minute longer than necessary near the man. Sitting in front of him felt like a shiver that would never go away. How can I do this in an hour? Focus, Lina. No snakes. The commander was not a good sitter. He insisted on frequent breaks to smoke. I found I could get him to sit longer if I showed him my progress from time to time. He was enchanted with himself, lost in his own ego. After another 15 minutes, the commander wanted a break. He reclaimed his toothpick from the desk and walked outside. I looked at the drawing. He looked powerful. Strong. The commander returned. He had Kretzky with him. He snapped the pad from my hands. He showed it to Kretzky, swatting him on the shoulder with the back of his hand. Kretzky's face was turned to the drawing, but I could feel he was staring at me. The commander said something to Kretzky. He replied. Kretzky's speaking voice was very different from his commands. His tone was calm, young. I kept my head down. The commander handed the pad back to me. He circled me.
his black boots taking slow, even steps around my chair. He looked at my face and then barked a command at Kretzky. I started sketching his hat. That was the last piece. Kretzky returned and handed the commander a file. Komarov opened the file and flipped through the papers. He looked at me. What did it say in that file? What did he know about us? Did it say something about Papa? I began sketching furiously. Hurry, Devi, I told myself. The commander began asking questions. I could understand bits and pieces. Been drawing since child? Why did he want to know? I nodded, motioning for him to turn his head slightly. He obliged and posed. What do you like to draw? He asked. Was he making conversation with me? I shrugged. Who is favorite artist? I stopped and looked up. Munch, I told him. Munch. He nodded. Don't know Munch. The red stripe above his brim needed more detail. I didn't want to spend the time. I just shaded it all in quickly. I carefully tore the sheet from the pad. I handed the paper to the commander. He dropped the file on the desk and grabbed the portrait. He walked around the office, admiring himself. I stared at the file. It was just sitting there, lying on the desk. There had to be something about Papa in that file, something that could help me get a drawing to him. The commander gave Kretzky an order. Bread. He told Kretzky to give me bread. I was supposed to get more than bread. The commander left the room. I began to protest. Kretzky pointed to the front door. Devi, he yelled, waving for me to leave. I saw Jonas waiting outside. But, I started. Kretzky shouted something and exited behind the desk. Jonas opened the door and peeked in. He told us to go to the kitchen door. I heard him. We can get our bread there, he whispered. But we're supposed to get potatoes, I argued. The commander was a liar. I should have drawn the snakes. I turned to pick up my drawing pad. I saw the file on the desk. Come on, Lina. I'm hungry, said Jonas. Okay, I said, pretending to gather my paper. I grabbed the file and shoved it in my coat. Yes, let's go, I said, rushing through the door. Jonas had no idea what I had done. Chapter 55. We walked to the NKVD barracks. I felt my heartbeat thump in my ears. I tried to calm myself, act normal. I looked over my shoulder. I saw Kretzky exit the rear door of the Kolkhoz office. He walked in the shadows to the barracks, his long wool coat swaying around his feet. We waited in back near the kitchen, as instructed. He may not come, I said, eager to run back to the shack. He has to come, said Jonas. They owe us food for your drawing. Kretzky appeared at the back door. A loaf of bread sailed into the dirt. Couldn't he hand the bread to us? Would that be so difficult for him? I hated Kretzky. Come on, Jonas, let's go, I said,